Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to our monthly Sat Song. This month's guest is Floyd Henderson. Before we get started, I just wanted to check and make sure that you guys can hear me. Good, very good. Let me introduce Floyd. If any time you cannot hear me or Floyd or Regina, who has also joined us here in our Google Hangouts room, do type that on the board and let me know that. So again, let me introduce Floyd. The realization of self means the shattering of the shell of separation so that the non-dual nature of reality is directly known. The summative statement, I am that I am, describes that understanding of self in absolute terms, as well as its expression in the relative. Floyd Henderson is that, just like all human beings. However, Floyd is fixed unshakably in this understanding, so all functioning, relatively speaking, flows directly from this self-knowledge. Floyd wanted to share this information with you guys about his life. He says that during his early years, or let me read it in first person like he wrote it, during my early years, I lived 8 months out of the year with my parents in a dangerous part of a city on a street with two gang leaders, where I witnessed a stabbing on that same street before I was 8 years old. The other 4 months of the year, I lived with my Cherokee medicine woman grandmother in her cabin in the piney woods of East Texas. Thus it was that by the ages of 5 and 6, I did not know either the term duality or the term non-duality, but I had already witnessed both at play. In the part of the city where my parents lived, called the slum, the misery and suffering generated by duality-based thinking and talking and behaving was observed. By contrast, I had witnessed the type of existence which grandmother enjoyed and which she and I shared because it unfolded in a non-dual style, which allowed her to model peace and love and contentment and independence and freedom from concepts. Floyd's books, including the Advanced Seeker series for those seeking realization versus the Advaita teachings, can be found on his website, floydhenderson.com. Okay, welcome, Floyd.
Well, nice seeing you, and Regina.
Nice seeing you too, Floyd and Jacqueline.
And welcome, Regina. Yeah. So we're all here, and I assume you guys can hear all of us. Can I get a yes or a no on that? Okay, good. Excellent. So, Floyd, what we normally do is we like to start with a bit of history with the person that we're interviewing. So I wonder if you would, and we got some of yours from what you wrote for us, but I wonder if you might walk us through your history a little bit and as a starting point.
Okay, thank you. And I appreciate the chance to be with all of you tonight. I guess the history in terms of journey, yes, if we want to call it that, started out with being raised in a Southern Baptist evangelical brimstone and fire church, and that triggered the rebellious nature that a personality type 4 has to start with. You know, so I began asking questions, and you know, then I would come across someday a person named Nisargadatta Maharaj, and he would say, you must question everything. You know, he asked, what if everything you've heard and read and believe is a lie? Question it all to find out. And I was already questioning early on and got plenty of corporal punishment for that fact. You know, a guy was in a whale's belly for how long? Adam and Eve were there and had Cain and Abel, and Cain killed Abel, and then what happened to create a population on the planet? And the comment was always to Betty, one of my classmates in Sunday school, go up and get his dad. He's at the end pew in church, bring him down, and I would be taken out for disturbing the class and given corporal punishment, which all seemed to fit in with the concept of God they were offering. You know, I grew up with this very punishing, angry God. Well, that didn't prove to create a real bonding attraction. And so once I could get away from that, I got away from that. And I was driven early on by a lot of the non-dual pointers that grandmother shared with me. Not that she was trying to teach non-duality, it's just who she was. She spoke from that point of pure universal consciousness and awareness, and that's just what came out. But there came a time when all of the seeking that I was doing, which was revealing the non-dual understanding, I came to see was not really to be shared on an open basis in general, that most people were not ready to hear that, and that created more alienation. And so I just started keeping all that to myself. And I was following that path for a good bit of time until I walked into a particular environment where a woman was on stage singing a song. And as soon as the band took a break, she came over and sat next to me. And she said, "Here's who I am. Who are you? I find you very interesting." And I said, "I haven't even said anything to you yet. I don't understand that, but what..." And we talked and found out there was some kind of attraction there on both our parts. And then she asked me the question, are you a Christian? And I said, "Are you?" She said, "Oh yeah, I'm a Christian through and through. I'm going to marry, but I'm only going to marry a Christian." I said, "Well, funny you ask." "Of course I'm a Christian, you know." So I just abandoned everything I knew, everything that was authentic, everything that dealt with the real, and went off on that track. And I lived that life for a long time. And eventually, I knew that I couldn't live with that inauthenticity. It was just like a cancer inside. It was like a rotor with blades just turning in there constantly, just ripping me up. And so eventually that had to come to an end. And at that point, I moved right back to the words that were coming back from my grandmother. And I entered onto what people call a non-dual path, so to speak. And I didn't leave it again. But as Maharaj explains, we get this understanding. And then we get into fear or desire, and we let it go. In order to get our fears alleviated or our desires met. And that's exactly what I did. I just sold myself out. That which was real and authentic. And so that's a capsule of what happened. It was quite a roller coaster journey, and the seeking was unbelievable. You know, the OCD was kicking in, and all of this obsessive compulsive behavior was just driving, you know. So I assumed the role of the seeker, and I became, of course, you're going to upgrade it from that, right? So I upgraded myself to the super seeker and went through a lot of seeking before even that stopped. And then I could just, as Maharaj said, like the deer, relax in the cool blue shade. And that's pretty much where I am today. I stay in the silence quite a bit.
Wow.
So,
thank you. let me ask you, you talk about Nisargadatta Maharaj as if you know him. So I'm curious whether you got to meet him, whether you've spent any time studying with him, or whether it was kind of a self-study based on his teachings.
Well, it was more of coming to understand I am Nisargadatta Maharaj, and Nisargadatta Maharaj was that which I am. And so, no, I never went to India. I had gotten out of the super seeker stage before I came across his path, so I didn't have to go there, you know. Otherwise, I would have.
Right.
You know, the super seeking was, oh my gosh, I had been on a long, arduous path, but the super seeking was probably the most arduous of all the parts of the path that I was engaged in. And if we have time, I can give you one example of what that looked like in my case.
Sure.
I had heard about a Cherokee chief in Santa Fe. So I thought in my super seeker stage, well, I don't have my Cherokee grandmother anymore. This guy is supposed to be the epitome of just a storehouse of the wisdom of the type that she had passed down to me. I have got to get into his presence. I got to be there. I got to meet him in person. I got to talk to him. I've got to go, go, go. And because I was on a spiritual go do Zoom track, this was just the next thing to do as soon as I heard of him. So I drove an hour and a half to the airport in Houston. I flew to Albuquerque, where you have to exchange and get another flight into Santa Fe. I rented a car. I got a hotel. And I drove up to the mountaintop. Literally, I'm going to the mountaintop. He's up in the top of the mountains overlooking the city of Santa Fe. And his wife had told me, you get 1 hour with him. He doesn't have the health to spend a lot of time. I know you come a long way, so instead of the 15 minutes I usually allow, I'll give you an hour. And of course, the super seeker, being a persona, has to have ego defense mechanisms trigger. So I'm like, how dare she, you know, how dare you try to limit my time with this man after all the trouble I've gone to. But okay, I'll take the hour. So I went in, sat down, and this man came out, obviously Cherokee by his appearance, had two canes, barely maneuvered. She helped him make the turn and sit in the chair opposite me. And he looked me in the eyes in a way that was way too piercing. I'm like, this guy's already seeing stuff that I don't usually show. But okay, we'll play along. And so he said, so you're on some kind of spiritual journey, are you? Yes, sir. I certainly am. And he said, tell me what you've done so far. And I told him what I had done so far. That took half an hour. Then he said, I said, what do you mean, I mean, you ought to be fawning over me hearing all that I've done. I mean, what's wrong with you, man? Don't you see this is a major accomplishment?
Right.
And now, you know, you're here in line and you're not grateful for being a part of this fabulous thing I'm at the center of. But that's all I got. So then he said, what do you intend to do with the rest of your existence? You have plans for that too? I said, oh, I've got plans. There's a lot that has to be done yet. You know, I haven't near got into all the Buddhism I want to understand. And, you know, there's just so much. I've got, I've read Tao, but I've got to really get into that deep, you know. And, Regina, I don't think you've had a chance to get to this part in the book yet, but I'll give you an example of what I wrote in one of the books about this, if I can find it quickly here. But basically, I recalled what I had been doing, and I described it this way. In his energy-consuming search for salvation, he had been dipped, dunked, sprayed, spayed, sprinkled, and neutered. In the quest for truth, he had been blessed, cursed, cussed, lectured, scolded, and praised. In his pursuit of life's meaning, he had been communioned, owned, grape juice, wined, ashrammed, accepted, rejected, mewed, and yogaed. In his chase for service work opportunities, he had been pulverized, martinized, and frappéed. And in the endeavor to attain eternal life, he had been baptized, booted, new-aged, powwowed, Far Eastern Indianized, incensed, saged, dowed, perued, Tibeted, washed in the blood, dunked in the waters, and purportedly purified. I mean, don't you just go, oh my gosh. I wasn't there yet when I was in Santa Fe, but I got there. You know, and that's when the peace came, when I finally said, oh, are you kidding me? That's what my OCD drove me to, you know? And I'm looking for peace, and I'm destroying any chance to have it, and I'm interrupting everyone else's. But I told him all of that that I had done. And so now his wife looks in and says, you have 3 minutes. I'm like, the guy hasn't even talked to me yet. Well, wonder why. I hadn't shut up. He couldn't have gotten a word in edgewise. So he said, again, just a That's all I got. And he gathered his two canes up, and she came over and made sure he had a good grip on one and a good grip on the other. And then she grabbed him from the front and started pulling me up to where he finally was able to stand erect. And he looked at me, and he said, I think it was about 10 words, in that case, you're going to be a very busy little boy. And walked away. Now, he told me exactly what I needed to hear, right? Yeah. He told me the truth I needed to hear at that point. That was not what I was looking for. I was looking for the wisdom that was going to open the skies and reveal to me all the power and the purity in the universe. And all he tells me is I'm going to be a very busy little boy. And walks out. I was thinking, I bet I could catch him and get those crutches. This was not the plan. So I went to the hotel, got rid of my reservation, got in my rental car, drove to the airport in Santa Fe, turned the car in, booked an earlier flight back to Albuquerque. Booked an earlier flight from there back to Houston, drove home, exhausted, and so disappointed that the wisdom did not come. Well, the wisdom came. I couldn't hear it, but the wisdom was there. And in the quiet, he began sharing with me from that distance. It was as if I were in his presence again and just hearing over and over again, you're going to be a very busy little boy. And it just hit me. I have been a very busy little boy. The next day, a fella called me and said, I'd like to pay your way to go to, at that time, it was still called Bombay. And I'd like you to go to Bombay with me and let's visit. Let's go there and find the truth. And I said, I may have just found a big piece of the truth I needed to hear.
Right.
So you go do what you want to do, but I don't think I'll be joining you. But thanks for the offer. And what the man told me began to resonate more and more. And as Regina and I have talked about, it started vibrating, that little inner guru, that little inner resource started waking up again as it had been fully awake with grandmother before I gave up my authenticity. Sacrificed it for phenomenal things, material things, you know, this, the attraction.
Right.
And once that's settled in here, once that inner guru was awakened and allowed to speak, and I was capable then of hearing it, it was saying the same thing. Until it finally started saying, you were a very busy little boy. But you don't have to be that busy anymore, do you? And the answer was absolutely not. So I got, when that guy called back and said, I really want you to go with me. I said, let me tell you a story that I heard from a man in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And what he told me, it may have no relevance for you, but I'll share this with you so you'll at least understand why I'm not going to be making the trip. So that was a big piece that was tiring as could be. But people say I had to do everything I did. I didn't have to do all that. I was driven to do it.
Right.
And as I point out, if you're being driven in a car, there's three places you can be and one you can't. You can be in the passenger seat, the back seat, or locked in the trunk. But you can't be behind the steering wheel. You can't be in charge of where you're going. So you might speed, you might crash, you might end up in the ditch, but you don't have any say if you're being driven. What that man told me took away a piece of that that was driving me. That obsessiveness, that compulsiveness. Seek, 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 seek. And the trick that I had to come to understand was when I assumed the persona of the seeker and then upgrade to the super seeker, that will end all true desire to find. Because what happens to this false me if I find? The seeker is no more.
Right.
So, with that subconscious understanding, I really didn't want to find. I wanted to keep seeking. I wanted to keep visiting holy sites. I wanted to keep visiting holy people. I wanted to keep reading holy texts.
Well, and yet there was something that allowed you to hear what he said.
Actually, what I look back over all this, Jacqueline, and the times that I was able to hear is when I was really tired. I'm tired. Yeah. You talked about surrender, I think, this morning.
Yes, sir.
Only time I could hear. I can't hear otherwise. I had to be pushed to the point where I was ready to surrender, and then it's like, oh, I hear what you're saying, of course. That makes perfect sense now. 5 minutes ago, it would have made no sense.
Yeah.
So I think you were spot on with that surrender message that you shared, because that's what worked, you know. It was just, and the reason I surrendered, I was tired. Just got so tired.
Well, which is probably the reason any of us ever surrender. I mean, you're just tired, tired of seeking, yeah. Right? Tired of doing, trying to make it happen myself. Yeah.
Journey, journey, journey. Work, work, work. Go do Zoom. You know, and it just, whew. I'm sure glad that all made me so tired.
Well, Floyd, let me ask you, this seeker and the super seeker is one of the stages that you talk about that we go through in your advanced seeker series. In fact, that series describes 7 steps of movement toward reality. And I wonder if you would take us through those steps. Tell us what those steps are.
Okay. That particular step, by the way, I'll jump ahead a little bit, is called the third step. The third step is where some of us abandon all of the bad ego states that we were assuming and playing. Oh, we get rid of those. I've been purified, washed in the blood, dunked in the water. Those are gone, baby. And what am I going to replace them with? Because the universe can't stand a void. My fist is here, but if I pull it away, the air fills that space where my fist was. There's no void. Right. The universe works against that void. So as soon as I get rid of this batch of ego states that were bad, then all of a sudden I adopt these new ones that are being offered to me. So I'm getting into these good ego states now. I'm the super religious guy. There were three that I see a lot of people hanging out with at that third step. I was the super religious guy. I was the spiritual giant. And I was the super seeker. See? And so all I did was substitute good phony ego states for the previously bad ego states. What Maharaj said, talking about the people who came to us and visited him there, he said, those who come here are beyond both sin and virtue. See, I thought I got rid of the sin, and I replaced it with this new these virtuous characters. Had you known me when I was playing those supposedly bad roles, and met me when I was playing the supposedly good roles,
yeah,
y'all would both be saying, would you bring those low life backs? Because this is more disgusting and obnoxious than you were back then. How dare you? So, and normally, by the way, Jacqueline, the way I answer that is, instead of moving through these seven steps, where were we prior to conception, and how did we get all the way back to this step one where we end up, which is body identification?
Sure.
But we can do it.
No, we can do it either way.
I just want to do it in a way that offers the most clarity, and we can do both.
Now, I want you to do it in the way that you think offers most clarity.
Well, let's do it in order. So okay. We can follow that.
Alrighty.
So what we do, we end up, after we go through all the programming, conditioning, domestication, acculturation, indoctrination, and brainwashing, we don't know who we are. We don't know what we are. And so we end up over here, and we believe in things we see. Not things we can, like Regina has this activated inner resource, inner guru. She can live in an intuitive fashion, in a much wiser way than reacting to what she sees and believing that's real.
Right.
See, people say nothing is real. No. Everything is real. You know, it's energy and matter. It's all, that's real. What is not real is what we perceive this to be that we can see. That's the part that's not real, is our perception. You can be driving down a road in a desert and see a mirage. And, you know, if you don't know better, you can think, oh, my gosh, we've got an obstacle in the road ahead. I better veer out of the way, and I'll drive off the side of the mountain and die. Because I bought into an illusion. And so we get to where we're so separated from authenticity and reality, and we're only believing in what we can see, that we end up identifying with the body. So that's where we are at the beginning of this seven-step path. And Maharaj pointed out all of them. He just never enumerated them. So we start out with this body identification. How do we get free of that? The understanding now is that what people are seeing, if they're viewing this, is this space, and what creates this space within, where the conscious energy manifests, where air moves in and out, where elements come and go, you know, every 28 days, new skin, every 5 days, new stomach lining, et cetera, et cetera. This thing's constantly in a state of flux. You know, what I was yesterday is not what this is today. It's a totally different deal. All you got to do is look at elementary, junior high, and high school pictures and look at 12 pictures and see, wait a minute, I think that's all me. It can't be. Look how different. You know, something's changing constantly.
Right.
So that can't be what's real, because what's real doesn't change. So what is it? Well, the way I got free of body identification is to turn, as Maharaj suggested, is to science. He said science will tell us the truth. Someday, he said, science will advance to the point that it will prove all the non-dual teachings. So you look at science. What is this? It's an elemental plant food body, we can call it, that creates a space that circulates conscious energy constantly. That's why I have to eat. I'm replacing conscious energy. If I don't eat long enough, I'll lose consciousness. Maha Samadhi, end of story. So what this is a triad. It's a three-part composite unity of elements, air, and conscious energy, a.k.a. consciousness. Wow. So which part of that am I? This I. The element part? The air part? The conscious energy part? No. That's just all functioning on its own, doing what it does. I don't stay awake at night and tell my heart to beat.
Right.
It's just all doing its deal. So I'm not the body. So what am I? Well, then I trigger that dangerous, dangerous thing inside the elemental plant food body, which overrides the brain, the elemental brain, and I tap in to the human generated mind. Uh-oh. And at that point, we give so much honor and credibility to the mind, my mind. Came to find out there's no such thing as my mind. There's only their mind, which they passed on to me, and I adopted without question at some later point. And it's really their mind. It's their ideas and notions, their perceptions, their misperceptions, concept ideas, all of that that we can combine into one word, beliefs. And then we've got something I can fight for and die for. My beliefs. People cut off heads because of their beliefs, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yes.
People kill other people because of their beliefs. So I had to come to that understanding to be free of what this mind was doing, because it was driving thoughts, which then in turn drive words, which in turn then drive actions. And if my thoughts are chaotic and dualistic and insane, then my words are going to be insane and my actions are going to be insane.
Yeah.
Been there, done that.
Me too.
Guilty charged. Okay, so it just seemed impossible when Maharaj kept saying, be free of your mind. Get rid of your mind. I have no mind. I have reached a state of zero concepts. What is all of that? And he said, it's so easy to be free of that. And I'm like, don't you sit there and tell me this is easy. You don't know what I've done in my life trying to get
right, free
of this thing.
Yeah.
This monster in here. Use the elemental brain, he said. Be free of the mind. How do you do that? Well, what's the mind full of? In my case, it was all of that stuff which we could call my beliefs, which weren't my beliefs. It was their beliefs.
And when you say they, you mean society and parents and, okay.
Everybody out there
right, that
have passed these things down for thousands of years, and they've been accepted unquestioningly. 97% of the people on the planet say they're affiliated with one religion or philosophy or another. Most of those will admit, when you ask, how long did you search before you found that and made and said, that's the one for me? Oh, I didn't. My parents took me there.
Right.
You know, so it was passed down. It was their religion or their spiritual beliefs that they passed down to me and I accepted unquestioningly with blind faith.
Or because you got paddled at church.
Bingo. Now, Regina, that's much more to my truth. You know, all this scorn that was heaped on me for rebelling against things and questioning it, that didn't quite rank with that dad taking that Navy belt off and beating me with the buckle end of it. And he believed, if you spare the rod, you spoil the child. I thought, can we discuss that maybe? Is there a chance of coming to a new understanding there? So, yes, Regina, you're exactly right. You know, what do they do? It's almost like I think I'll become Catholic and get a nice exorcist in here because you're trying to beat the devil out of me with that belt. Let's see if we can find a different approach to get the devil out, you know. So, yes, if as soon as I understand, you know what, these are not my beliefs. I didn't come up with any of this. Newton came up with gravity. Copernicus and Galileo came up with where we really are in the scope of the solar system and the universe, you know, and the sun. They came up with that. Nothing, I haven't come up with anything new. Those aren't my beliefs. I haven't come up with anything. There would come some understandings that were new to me once I cleared out that garbage. Here, I put the garbage out on Monday and Thursday. It just seems the sane thing to do. Get the garbage out of here. Man, it's stinking up my house. But I never had the same thought to clean out the garbage here. Once I understood these are not my beliefs, my ideas, my concepts, it sure got easier to just let them go. The attachment, which was as firm as steel, began to get kind of rubberized, and it was able to stretch out and move away a little bit. And finally, it got out there, and the rubber bands just popped, and it was gone. And at that point, I started functioning spontaneously under the auspices of my brain, which is what every living thing on the planet does except humans. This whole area I'm in is filled with deer. They roam around, they graze. In the summer, they sit in that cool blue shade Maharaj talked about. They procreate. They have fun. They work by foraging. They sleep and rest. And they don't have a concept that they believe in that keeps them awake at night. Not one. How many people all over this nation and the planet are staying awake at night, worried about this, or that? Over things that aren't even their beliefs, their ideas. And as I shared with one fellow, you're worried about all of this stuff. What's your history? I think your history would be like mine. If you look back, you'll see the things you worried about never happened, and the things that put you flat on your back came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Your wife's left you. You're shocked. Everybody else saw a few signs along the way, bro, but whatever. Because I've been there. The night before she left, she came in and put her hands on my cheeks and kissed me, and she said, "Everything's okay." Really? Well, that was nice of you to say, and I appreciate that. The next morning, I called at 10 o'clock, and I said, "That was so sweet what you did, you know. Everything's okay." She said, "Forget it. I'm leaving today."
Oh, goodness.
So I told him, you know, the things that floor us, we don't even see them coming, really. We deny a lot of it. And so why are you worrying about these things that have never happened if you look at your history? So you understand all that, then you get rid of the mind, and you start functioning under the auspices of the brain, and you start living spontaneously like everything else on the planet.
Mm.
But There are a few things that hang on because of egotism, and that's those identities.
Oh, yes.
Those personalities, those false identities. Why should I give them up? They're good. I was the horrible this and horrible that and horrible that and horrible that. But look at me now. Are you checking out this package in front of you now? The super religious one, the spiritual giant, the super seeker? Are you out of your mind? Give up the good stuff that's helping me and so many others.
Right.
And the ones I thought I was helping were thinking, would you please shut up just for a few minutes? But I can't do that because in the U.S., we brag about our freedom of speech. Other places are very happy with their freedom from speech. So that's one of the other things that just fights to stay. So these ego states, the good ones, were fighting for their lives, so to speak, because there was payoff. And the payoff was just more egotism, more false pride, more arrogance. Look at me now. In the old days, it was don't look at me. Don't look at what I'm doing. Now it's look at me. No, we don't want to look at you. We don't want to hear you. We don't want to look at you. You know, so finally you get to the point where you understand none of that is me. The body's not me. My thoughts, my beliefs, those aren't me. The personalities aren't me. And when we give up the last one, we shift into the fourth step, which some people call the child ignorance stage. I call it the child no knowing stage. My little granddaughter's just learning some words, but for the most part, she doesn't know. She's in the no knowing stage. And she's the epitome of joy. Everybody's looking for bliss if they're seekers.
Right.
Bliss is not a noun, it's a verb. She's living bliss. It's just amazing when I look at her and say, that's where I was supposed to get back to. That was the last time I was unconditionally happy.
Right.
All these other things I tried to find and grasp and hang on to make me happy, they didn't make me happy, and I didn't end up grasping and hanging on to them. She's hanging on to nothing except being blissful. It's just amazing. Let her run out in a shower like they sent me a little video clip yesterday. She's running around in the rain and is one of the happiest humans I've ever seen. And I used to do that. But I forgot. I needed that inner guru to ask me, Floyd, when was the last time you were unconditionally happy? Well, that was probably 3 nights ago. I met so-and-so. No, keep going. You're way off the mark. Keep going. You got to go back years to find the answer to this question I'm asking you. When was the last time you were unconditionally happy? It was when I was a child chasing an ice cream truck. It was when I was a child playing in the rain. It was when I was a child sitting next to grandmother on the porch of a cabin that had no electricity, no running water, with this amazing blue moon coming up over the top of the pine trees. And I looked over at her hand and the light hit it, and I looked and saw all those veins with the blueness magnified from that light. And she was just sitting there so calm. And I'd been rocking away while she's just sitting there. And my rocker kept riding up to the edge of the porch, and I was about to fall off, and I would get up and pull it back and start rocking again and rocking again and rocking again. I rode that rocker back and forth 5 or 6 times, and I looked, and she hadn't moved an inch. And And suddenly, I just sat still for some reason. I just felt the stillness of the night and of her. And I just, once again, I was tired. And I just sat still. And she reached over and put her hand on my hand. And I didn't move anymore that night. And I said, this is right. This is okay. That was 5 or 6 or 7 or 8. And it was unconditional happiness that I experienced that she taught me. Yet it took me forever to get past those bad ego states and the good ego states and get to the no-knowing state like I was in that night and just relax and take it easy. Stop going and doing and zooming, Floyd. That was that inner resource that Regina taps into, that anybody who has removed all the blockages can tap into. And from then forward, you can live under the auspices of the brain and the inner guru, and you're going to abide in a most different fashion, was my experience.
Yes.
From there, we reach a state where we just begin witnessing purely. There's two witnessing states. There's the subject-object witnessing. I see Jacqueline.
Right.
I see Regina. That separates us.
Right.
We're different. Instead of I see me, you see me, you know, you see yourself. Okay? And that's pure witnessing. Some people call that the true self, manifest now. It's just witnessing. The child no-knowing state allows for that, for the pure witnessing. Because if you don't know, you can't judge.
Right.
You can't say that person's skin is a different color. And they're different from me, and I am therefore better than them because they are the other.
Right.
That's subject-object. It is at the very heart of the ultimate sickness, which is infecting the entire population of the globe. Once you move beyond that, then you're headed toward Mahasamadhi. It's this thing's going to finally start coming to an end. And you move beyond the beingness, and you actually move beyond the non-beingness too, because what I thought was being wasn't being at all. Does that make sense?
I don't know what you thought being was. I'm sorry, say again, please.
I thought this was me.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
This was me being.
Right, right.
No, it wasn't. This was a bunch of elements just getting together and getting apart. Second law of thermodynamics. What comes together will come apart. And that's all that was going on here. And in the meantime, I'm circulating oxygen in and out, and I'm circulating conscious energy in and out by what I'm eating. So then you move back to your original nature, which was awareness it was not aware of. As far as consciousness, conscious is nothing more than awareness, which is manifested. Become free of everything in the mind, suddenly becomes aware of the lies, aware of all that we are not, aware of what we were before this act of friction that triggered this whole circulation of elements that ended up with this. And at that point, there is no awareness of, there's no consciousness of, there's no period. And so it's even beyond being and non-being. Krishna said, those who are realized know I am beyond being and non-being. Right. And then he was so nasty, he said, the rest are fools.
You have to count me in that number, I guess.
Not call for, Krishna. Just leave it at the first part, okay? Let them figure it out from there. I'm beyond being and non-being. I'm back to my original nature when I was not being anything, and I was not being anything. That was triggered by an act of friction is all that set that whole thing in motion.
You mean your parents having sex?
Jacqueline.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's all this is. You know, you've got this whole thing that's triggered by a little spark of energy called sunshine manifest within a plant. At that point, plant cells, we know, have that consciousness working, because a plant can be facing the sun this way in the morning, but the sun's moved a little bit the next morning. But before it even rises, the plant moves just a tiny little bit so it can get the maximum energy. We come along and we either eat plants or we eat something that ate plants. And there's this transfer, and then through this scientifically understandable process, plant cells transform into what we call human cells, and this thing starts growing. And the only thing that needs to happen is, the only thing that needed to happen in my case was for my mother to continue to eat food that could be transferred into human cells, and then those could be cycled into whatever this was going to be. And that triggered the whole thing. Then I come in and I'm just witnessing. And then I'm not knowing. And then they start assigning identities. Mm-hmm. You are such a good boy, or more often, you are such a bad boy. Look what you've done. Look what you broke. You didn't eat your boil canned spinach. And I never will. I'll sit here till 9
never will.
And 10 and 11. You can get your Navy belt. You can do whatever you want. I am not eating canned boiled spinach. I have that thing. What do you call it? Taste buds? You know? If I didn't have taste buds, I'd chomp that right down, Dad. But it ain't going to happen. Okay, so that's how all this came about. Now, Maharaj said to understand, to reach the understanding, you start here and you go back in reverse. And when you go back, step by step in reverse, you can come to understand what your original nature was. And there was no you as such. There was just energy and matter.
Right.
And how that got pulled into this sequencing thing that happens. And then you witnessed, and then you didn't even know, but then you started knowing. And so they took me to an evangelical right-wing church with a motto, if it feels good, stop it. And I started knowing. Boy, did I start knowing. But I also started questioning, because I'm a type 4, like Maharaj, and started questioning.
When you say type 4, I just want to point out to people that you're talking about the Enneagram.
Yeah, thanks, yeah. Which has Myers-Briggs correlation, you know. You can look it up over there, too, and get the same understanding. Yeah. And then they put the junk in my mind, and then pretty soon I'm so messed up here, I don't have a clue who or what I am, and so all I can be is what I think I'm seeing. I look in the mirror, that's got to be me. It's a reflection. In fact, it's everything in reverse, isn't it? What? I don't even look like that. What I look like to me is not even what I look like to you. How can any of that be real?
Right.
So those are the steps.
All right. Very good. Thank you for sharing them with us. Regina, do you have a question? I feel like you might have a question.
Oh, well, you know, I don't, but I'm sure if I look for a second, I can come up with one.
I don't mean to put you on the spot. I just thought.
No, that's all right. It's just when I get into listening, I get into listening. And so then I have to think for a moment. So I do have a question.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah. You're off the hook.
I got more questions written here, I want you to know.
First of all, just to let people know what my history is with Floyd. First of all, it's a bit of a mystery. I don't even know where I came across his name for sure. I just came across, and as soon as I just saw the name, I wrote it down and said, when I finish reading this book, I'm going to look up this guy. And that's what happened. I finished reading the book I was reading, which was Bernadette Roberts. Actually, it was two books I was reading simultaneously. And then I looked up Floyd, and I've been reading him since. So I've nearly finished The Advanced Seeker's Guide, which is an anthology. And in typical Regina fashion, I started at the end and then went back and started at the beginning, but I love the end. And now today, yesterday, I started reading a book that he wrote about Nizar Gadada. The name of the book again, Floyd, is?
I think it was the Evolution Of.
That's it, The Evolution Of. And in that book, there's two words that you use when you're talking that we also use here, but I'm not sure we're talking about the same thing. The words that you use are direct path. I wonder if you could define for us again what direct path is, what you mean by that.
Okay. That is an excellent question. There are five basic teaching methods that are being used in non-duality. And then many of them have some kind of combination with this yoga or that yoga, etc. And Maharaj went through about six or seven yogas, but he always stayed with the direct path. That's the path that he uses that have some clearly defined steps that take you directly from this misperception to the understanding of what is, to an understanding of the functioning of the totality. From understanding nothing, thinking I'm my body, to understanding the function of the totality. And you're just following this direct path, which, as I mentioned, he said, is in opposition, directly opposite of the steps that the coming in leg and the going out leg. Now, once you reach that understanding, there's a second coming in. So that's the third leg where you come back in, but you don't come in being susceptible to what they want you to believe, to what they tell you, to assuming the ego states they've assigned you or that you've taken on yourself. You're free of all that. And then the last leg, of course, is the going back out to your original state. You know, so that's the direct path that we talk about. Then you've got Neo Advaita. You've got Neo Vedanta. Then you've got what is called by many pseudo Advaita. And so those are some of the paths that are available. He just followed the direct path. Now, what he changed was the yoga that he threw in there. He went through the guru worship stage. He went through the worship stage. He went through the knowing stage. He went through several stages until he finally fixated in the Nisarga Yoga alone, which was where his assumed name came from. And that's the natural yoga. It means I'm inviting you to abide naturally. Abide like the deer, the fish, the birds. You know, not like the humans who are behaving in a most insane fashion because of insane programming, conditioning, domestication, etc. Not their fault. There's no blame. You could, if you understand the science of the psychology of programming, etc., you understand how we end up that way. What's hard to understand is why we hang on to that garbage instead of taking it out to be hauled away. See, that's the only thing. And Maharaj said there's no difference in you and me. We're exactly the same. It's just a matter of understanding. And by the way, once this is over, doesn't matter either way, whether you understand or not, because you're going to end up in your original nature, which is just this free-ranging, cage-free awareness without awareness of anything in particular, consciousness without any conscious ofness. Consciousness is just awareness manifested within a space. That's all it is. So, if we purge all the garbage that's creating blockages, then we can use the pure universal consciousness to re-engage with the awareness. And that's the key, to be aware. Which again, Regina, the inner guru is already aware. That inner resource is already aware. We just need to be able to tap into it, and we do that by getting rid of the blockages.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to repeat back what I think I'm hearing, and you give me a correct or not correct. How's that sound?
Perfect.
Okay, perfect. So the direct path, then, in effect, is those seven steps, which is disidentifying with the body, disidentifying with the mind, disidentifying with the personas.
Right.
Moving into the innocence, what I call the innocence.
Yes.
Then realizing consciousness, and then realizing beyond consciousness.
Yeah, here's what's coming after all of this.
Right. Now let me ask you this. We get our language, obviously, from different teachers that we've listened to. So
sure.
one teacher that we listen to is named Michael Langford, and when he refers to the direct path, he's referring specifically to sitting in eyes closed meditation, paying attention to awareness, and ignoring all other thoughts. Is that something that you've ever practiced, or that you feel Nisargadatta ever practiced? And what are your thoughts about that type of practice?
It was part of what we did along the way.
Yeah.
Definitely a part of what we did along the way. Now, again, direct path refers to a teaching method, as Maharaj used it. It's one of, as most people use it, if you look up the methods of teaching non-duality, direct path is one of those, just one of the paths. Maharaj had a little different take on it. When he allowed people to come in, he had two sessions a day. He would allow them to stay either 7 days or 14 days, depending on whether they were ready for this or not. The readiness is all. If he saw the readiness, he allowed you to keep coming back. But after that period of time, you had to go. But what he wanted you to do in the meantime was not go back and meditate on this or that or that, but to sit in the quiet and allow the pointers that he shared to become embedded in the consciousness and the awareness. That was the only goal. If you get that, once you realize fully, that's just one more tool you don't need. You know, when this house was built, when the last nail was driven in, the carpenters put away their hammers.
Right, I understand. So yeah. Let me again repeat back what I think I'm hearing. You tell me if I'm correct or incorrect.
Okay.
So what I'm hearing is that definitely the meditation, contemplation that happens is important at a certain stage. But then at some point, that tool needs to be laid down. And I suppose that if you're really paying attention, you'll know when to lay that tool down.
Once you're seeing clearly.
Yeah.
Once all the blockages are gone, it just starts happening automatically and spontaneously.
Well, in fact,
it's not even a conscious decision. It's like, I'm done.
Yes, it stops.
You know, and then you just enjoy whatever you enjoy.
Right. And that's the
And it may be what I enjoy sometimes, and it may not. It may never be what I enjoy sometimes.
Right.
But that's where you get to. You know, it just happens automatically. I was doing an online session with a fellow up in Pennsylvania. And when we started, by the way, he was an Enneagram Type 5, which is the knowledge gatherer. He's the knower. He's the great knower. He's the great accumulator of knowledge. And when we started, back in that corner was a pyramid and some stuff, and behind him was a wall of books. There must have been 8 shelves. You said you don't have any books. That's suggesting something that indicates you're moving where you want to be, or you've moved to where you want to be. But here's all these books, and then you can see part of another shelf over here. And I couldn't even, if I had any interest in doing it, is totaled all those up. There must have been, I'm guessing 1,000 books there, and then this one, if it was a full wall too, probably another 1,000 over there. Somewhere around the fourth step in our discussions, I took them in order. We did an hour for each. I said, he started sharing what was going on at that point and what he'd come to understand, and we were reviewing. You got this, 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 yeah. But I said, hold on a minute. I said, are you in a different room? No, this is the same room I've always been in. I said, where are all those books and pyramids? And I think you had some crystals or something, you know? He said, I threw them all away. What? I threw them all away. He said, I was just showing off all this knowledge that I had anyway. People were supposed to come in here and be impressed. My gosh, you've read all those books? He said the answer was yes, though I hadn't. But it was a testimony to all the knowledge he had been exposed to. Maharaj went through the knowing yoga. He did that for a while. But he moved on beyond it, because each time he moved beyond something, he did it because it was a version of the ultimate medicine that was not really treating the ultimate sickness. And that's what this guy came to. And he said, why do you mention that? Because I said, it is so telling. It is so telling. We're on the track. I didn't have to suggest anything to him about that. It was just spontaneously. He said, this is no longer a part of what I need. You know, I realize there's something beyond all the stuff these. Now, do we need the? I had to read some things, you know. Most do. We don't all sit in front of gurus personally all day long. And I was very impressed with when I looked at your site and saw that the people who are involved with what y'all are doing are following something that's a little different path from what the 97% are following, which is what I invite people to do if they're interested. You know, seek in a different way. People go into this particular forum or venue and they never leave it 40, 50, 60, 70 years until somebody puts them in a box or takes them to a funeral pyre or whatever. Try seeking in an avenue, in a venue that's a little different from what you've sought in if you want to understand something that's a little different from what you've been exposed to. And that's what really impressed me about what I saw y'all were offering. And if the people involved with you are interested in that, it's very telling. It says a lot. So.
Yeah, well, and as I mentioned before, I have no idea how I came across your name or why I even cared about your name. It's kind of funny that I should see a name and write it down. I mean, after I finish this book, I'm going to find out about this person.
Yeah.
But just so everybody knows, I've told Floyd about gentle healing, so he knows that we're going through a 3-year gentle healing process. He knows we're in the second year right now. And I feel that we're going to be looking at Floyd's work in our third year. So just as a heads up to everyone, it feels absolutely perfect for the next and final step. There's only 3 years of gentle healing. It's not something I plan to do for the rest of my life.
Right.
So I'm excited about that.
Yeah. In fact, it's very possible that after the third year of gentle healing that I'll kind of just back out and disappear altogether. So I definitely want to end that third year with a bang. And so this is why I am reading all of Floyd's books. He's very straightforward, very honest, and if the way that he words things doesn't knock one out of their belief system, they're simply not ready to be knocked out of their belief system. Mm. In fact, Floyd, I'll tell you a secret. You knocked Jacqueline out of a little bit of a belief system, and she went...
No.
Yeah, you did. You did. I went reeling.
She went spinning for like 3 weeks, and I just sat back and smiled. I told her, well, this is perfectly normal.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you, Floyd.
Right. I was just sitting on this pile of logs and somebody lit it on fire.
That's right.
What is this?
What happened to
I
me?
Was so comfortable there.
when I read your seven steps, I think I wrote to you and told you that I perceived myself to be in step four. And you said something like, well, read on a little further and see if you feel different. But actually, I still perceive myself to be in step four. That feels like an honest assessment. So I don't know if you have anything to say to me.
Remind us what step four is, please.
Step four is, I call it the innocence, but he called it the child. Would you call it the child?
Well, some call it the child ignorant stage. Yeah. Some call it the child no knowing stage.
Yeah, it's life is play now.
Excellent. I mean,
there's still a very strong devotional aspect that isn't letting me go. I start each morning in devotion, but all of life feels like play, and it's a joy, and it's
easy. Excellent. See, and Maharaj would endorse exactly what you found and the fact that that resonated with you, and you were able to say, this is where I'm at. What he said is, if you want to get this whole understanding, you take all seven steps. And when he was in the Hindu non-duality stage, that's what he said. When he was in the spirituality non-duality stage, and I am that, that's what he said. But eventually he said, that's not even necessary. All you really need to do is find out who you're not. And that's at the fourth step, which is who you are. You know you're not all of those bad roles that people labeled you with. You're not the good roles that people right. label you with. You just are.
Yes.
You're just being.
Yeah.
You're just enjoying.
I think it's funny when people tell me who I am. I never really correct them, but I always think it's funny.
Yeah.
Because you can just see a bunch of little Regina's running around out there.
Yeah.
And everybody
yeah, Jacqueline said something funny one time. She, when we were lining up Skype, she said, who is this I that wants to Skype? You know, there is no I that wants to Skype.
Yeah.
You know. So.
And that's another one of my experiences is that life is just very, very spontaneous. I can't really say that I have the only desire that I would have left is the desire, I guess, to continue this path to full realization. And other than that, everything else that happens, you know, is going along well. And of course, some things are could be more concerning. Fortunately, I don't have anything more concerning in my personal life right now.
Yeah.
But, some things could be more concerning. But for the most part, everything is very, very easy, very, very spontaneous. And yet there's still, I don't know if seeking is the right word for it, there's still forward movement is what I would call it. Like I don't feel to stop morning contemplation, morning meditation. And in fact, there's nothing else I want to do in the morning. I get up and I go directly there and I stay there for about 5 hours before I move elsewhere, which is why I made the comment earlier before we started, at least I'm not in my pajamas. I spent a lot of time in my pajamas.
Right. Well, Maharaj said that when he has seen full realization manifest, he's watched and he has seen some of those people teach and some of them don't teach. Mm.
Yeah.
It's just happening spontaneously and they're doing both with freedom. There's no attachment to outcome either way. I'm just laying this stuff out, you know. So a guy told me, I'll give you $500 to let me come to your house this week and follow you around from morning to night to see everything you do. I said, why don't you do this? Why don't you take that $500 and give it to the people hauling the garbage away from your house? Because they're working hard for nothing. Give them the $500 because you'd be throwing it away otherwise if you want to come. You can't watch me. Nothing I do during the day would probably be anything that would interest you. It's not like a realized person looks like this, thinks like this, talks like this, does only this. You know, that's impossible. No, that doesn't happen. Some may teach, some may not. One person, and I am that, told Maharaj, I said, I got a friend, and, you know, I used to visit. We would talk all day long, and now I go to see him, and he only talks a small percentage of how much he used to. And Maharaj says, and soon he will probably not talk at all. You know, some will talk, some won't. Some will teach, some won't.
Okay, guys, I have a couple questions from our listeners. So I wanted to they've typed them on the board. So I'm just going to read them. Jay asked, "How does Floyd think about the Holy Spirit?"
Well, we can talk about the Holy Spirit. I used to be a lay leader in a Methodist church. I did all of that. That super religious guy, he played that baby. He ran it all out. And so I talked a lot about the Holy Spirit. I talked a lot about God. You know, I talked a lot about the Son and the Holy Spirit. Where I finally got to was this. Other than you guys, I had only known one minister who understood the non-dual teachings of Christ. And I asked him, why don't you preach those? And he said, because it would be my last sermon. I'd lose my job. I said, then lose your job, man. Tell the truth. Yeah. Okay, he didn't want to lose his job, and good thing he didn't listen to me. So I subsequently met another man. He's in Austin, Texas. He's a type 4 rebel. And my daughter and her husband found this guy, and I went along with him one day to listen to him because they said he's not like any preacher you've ever listened to. And in that particular sermon, someone had questioned him, actually challenged him big time. You know, I'm not sure you believe in God, and I'm not sure you believe in Christ as the Son of God, and I'm not sure you believe in the Holy Spirit. And he said, well, what concept of God are you talking about? The one with an elephant face and trunk and eight arms? Or might you be talking about the ones the Greeks worshipped or the Romans worshipped? Are you talking about the one that Abraham came up with, that, you know, Jews, Christians, and Muslims worship? Well, what concept would you have me believe in? He said, let me explain what I believe about God. And I mentioned something like this earlier. For me, God is not a noun, it's a verb. Mm. Holy Spirit is not a noun, it's a verb.
Beautiful.
Yeshua is not a noun, it's a verb. By the way, that was Jesus' name. If Jesus were walking the streets and a Christian thought he recognized him and yelled, Jesus, Jesus, stop, wait up, he would keep walking because he got to know that name. His name was Yeshua. Okay, so he said, Yeshua is not a noun, it's a verb. Now, what does that verb mean? Now we get to the understandings. Jay's understanding, yours, the one I have, the one Regina has. Is it possible that Reverend Rigby was right, that it's not a noun, but it's a verb? He said, if you think God looks like me and I look like God, you've missed something.
Yeah.
Okay? But if you understand that when you look at me and when you look at you, you're seeing the potential for Godness to manifest through you, through your thoughts and words and deeds, then you might be onto something. It's a verb. It calls for action. You can talk all this stuff all day long. We're seeing people talking it all day long, but now that they have a chance, they're not living it anymore, are they, what they were talking? All that's gone to the wayside. They got a different agenda. So, If you would at least take that into consideration and ask, if God is a verb and if I am God, how would I be behaving? Now we may get somewhere. maybe the ultimate sickness in the planet would be decreased a little bit if we went that route.
And you have referenced the ultimate sickness a couple of times now, and I just want to be clear. Can you define that for us, the ultimate sickness?
That was a term that Maharaj and many of his peers used, and many of the sages for ages before him had used, to describe this illness that is manifested among the non-realized masses. It's a sickness. See, he said, remember, no one comes here unless they're beyond both sin and virtue. I got an email last week from a guy who said, don't you believe in evil? Wasn't Hitler evil? What Maharaj said to look for as symptoms of the ultimate sickness are ignorance and insanity. He said, early on, realization is this, realization is that. In the end, he said, realization is freedom from learned ignorance. You realize truth, which can't be stated, but you still realize that it's opposed to falsehoods that we've been believing. So the ability to differentiate between true and false comes with realization. Realizing that was none of that was true that I believe. Wasn't true at all. Okay, so if you're functioning from a standpoint of learned ignorance, if you're being driven by the ultimate sickness, then you're going to be showing actions. You're going to have thoughts that are based in ignorance rather than in fact. You're going to have words that are based in hatred and separation and different from and talking about the other. And your actions are going to show those are what your beliefs are. So you're going to attack people with different skin color. You know, grandmother told me some things that I don't bore people with. But let me tell you, the people that she was related to, they had a pretty bright red tint to their skin. They were treated quite differently when this place was invaded. And 150 million were killed in what we now call North, Central, and South America. They were the other. That's the product of ignorance and insanity manifesting in believing you're different than me, therefore I'm better than you, and therefore you really don't even deserve to live. You're the other, and you need to be separated from our wonderful, supreme fold. See, so that's the ultimate sickness. What is the ultimate medicine? That which eliminates learned ignorance, programming, getting rid of the effects of programming, conditioning, domestication, acculturation, brainwashing, and indoctrination. And then using the ultimate medicine to remove all the other blockages that do not allow clear seeing and perceiving truth without even trying to state it. The Tao is right. The truth can be known but not said.
Right.
And then abiding in a fashion that shows true God, that is true love. Maharaj said, love is knowing I am everything and everyone. Wisdom is knowing I'm nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing you define as an identity here can be me.
Right. Yeah.
Love is knowing I'm you. And love for you is knowing you are me and there is no other. And that's not foo-foo land talk. That's just science. If you look at the science, there's nothing that makes us different, no matter what skin colors might be, no matter what sexual preference might be, no matter what any of that stuff that we use in this culture and other cultures use to separate and create the sense of the other, who's the enemy and we've got to get rid of. Imagine if the ultimate medicine could be distributed on a global basis to eliminate the ultimate sickness. Imagine the peace that would come.
Yeah, amazing.
Here first and then out there next. That's the way it would work. Is it going to happen?
He's shaking his head.
Not on a mass scale. It can happen one at a time, and that's what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
You know, you can, if you've got a barracks full of people, you can sound some unbelievably loud, obnoxious noise and wake them all up at once. But if you want to wake them up to where they feel pretty good about coming out of their sleep, you would do that gently, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. You don't go in and bounce a sleeping baby up and down and flop it over and flip it over and wake up, get up, time to go to daycare. You don't do that if you're kind and loving. And that's the way that when I was asleep, I wanted to be awakened. I had people hammering me, and they thought they were awakening me.
Yeah.
3 days in a whale stomach, wake up, see the truth. You know, that's what really happened. And I'm like, I'm having trouble with that one. Miss Myrtle. Miss Myrtle was that sweetheart that tried to teach us the right-wing word of God.
Does somebody have their hand up?
I was just saying, I noticed we have 4 minutes left. So I didn't know if you had another question
the
you
other,
address quickly.
The other question was whether, let me see how it, thank you for keeping track of the time, Gina. Let's see, was Floyd in the 12 steps of recovery?
I've been in everything of recovery. I've done it all. I mean, that was the list earlier. I've done it all.
Right.
I've tried it all, and nothing worked. Nothing was an effective version of the ultimate medicine until I came to the non-dual understanding, which is what Christ taught, by the way. A dual-minded man is unstable in all ways. You'll never see the kingdom of heaven. It's within. I do not come in peace. I come with the sword to destroy mother-in-law, father-in-law, sister-in-law. In other words, all these roles. And then you get to the summative statement of non-duality. I am that. I am. When you speak of me, speak of me as I am. When you, before Abraham was, I am.
I am.
See, at the end, that's what he was teaching, was non-duality. And until I got to that, and I understood even what he was talking about all along, son of a gun, boom, I was looking for the clouds to open, they opened.
Yeah.
Wow, the light came in. Woo. Man, thank you for taking out the garbage.
I think we're about out of time. Is there anything that you want to see? You got 2 minutes, maybe you got a minute and a half. Floyd, anything else you want to share with us before you go?
Well, I think there's one thing I should suggest.
Yes, sir.
To any listeners out there. I put a YouTube post up years and years and years ago, and a guy commented on that. Jacqueline knows this. He said, I'll be darned. I finally seen a redneck Hindu. Well, I'm not a redneck and I'm Hindu. I just sound like one. And so what I'm suggesting to any of your listeners who can't understand anything I've said because of this accent some people say I have, Jacqueline has lived in Kentucky, so she can translate for you. Just call her on the phone, and she can clear all this up. She can take that accent right out of there and spit out,
Say the Queen's English. That's right. Floyd, we are so thrilled to have had you with us this evening. We hope you come back and visit us sometime. We'll make an effort to visit you. Well, not that it's an effort, but we'll come visit you too on it's floydhenderson.com. If you folks want to see what's going on with Floyd and see his books and see how you can connect with his teaching. Anything else, Floyd, you want to say?
It's been a real treat getting to know you and Regina, mm-hmm. and to see what you're doing that is so different from what anybody else is doing. I congratulate you because it's amazing what's going on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Floyd.
I wish the best to your continued efforts and to everyone involved with what you're doing because there's some amazing opportunities.
Thank you. Well, yeah, and as I mentioned, Floyd, you're going to be an integral part. You know, people are going to, if they don't know you now, a year and a half from now, they will be sleeping with you.
That'll be a treat.
Okay, too funny, guys. thanks again. Thank you.
Thanks again.
Thanks,
love all of you.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Best to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
And with that, guys, I will let go of the mic, and thank you all for being here.